On February 8, 2013, the Department of Justice released, several days after it had been leaked to the press, an official copy of its white paper on the lethal targeting of Americans. The DOJ released the document to organizations that had requested it to do so under the Freedom of Information Act, including the Federation of American Scientists, which had filed a request on February 6, 2013, and the online news publication TruthOut.org, which had done so on August 10, 2012. The official version of the white paper appears to be identical to the leaked document posted by NBC News on February 4th, except that it contains a notation on the first page stating, Draft November 8th, 2011. The 16-page memo entitled Lawfulness of a Lethal Operation Directed Against a U.S. Citizen Who is a Senior Operational Leader of Al-Qaeda or an Associated Force provides new details about the legal reasoning behind one of Obama administration's most secretive and controversial policies, its dramatically increased use of drone strikes against Al-Qaeda suspects abroad, including American citizens. Such strikes include a September 2011 operation in Yemen that killed alleged Al-Qaeda operatives Amr Awakali and Samir Khan. Both were U.S. citizens who had never been indicted by the U.S. government, nor charged with any crimes. In direct connection with the lawfulness and proportionality of drone attacks, the United Nations Special Rapporteur on Human Rights and Counterterrorism, Ben Emmerson, formally launched on January 24, 2013, an inquiry into the civilian impact of the use of drones and other forms of targeted killing. The inquiry focuses on the applicable legal framework and critically examines the factual evidence concerning civilian casualties with a view to making recommendations to the UN General Assembly concerning the duty of states to conduct effective, independent, and impartial investigations into the lawfulness and proportionality of such attacks. The results of the inquiry are planned to be presented later this year. The secrecy surrounding drone strikes against Al-Qaeda suspects abroad quickly emerged as a central issue in the confirmation hearings of John Brennan, President Obama's nominee for the position of CIA director. Mr. Brennan has been a key architect of the drone campaign. A graduate of Fordham College, a Jesuit school, Brennan was the first administrative official to publicly acknowledge drone strikes in a speech last year, calling them consistent with the inherent right of self-defense. In a separate talk at Northwestern University Law School on March 5, 2012, Attorney General Eric Holder specifically endorsed the constitutionality of targeted killings of Americans, saying they could be justified if government officials determine the target poses an imminent threat of violent attack. However, the confidential Justice Department white paper introduces a more expansive definition of self-defense or imminent attack than described either by Brennan or Holder in their public speeches. Essentially, the Obama administration's lawyers assert in the paper that it would be lawful to kill a United States citizen if an informed, high-level official of the government decided that the target was a ranking figure in Al-Qaeda who posed an imminent threat of violent attack against the United States, and if his capture was not feasible. The white paper is based on a still-classified memo on targeted killings of U.S. citizens prepared by the Justice Department's Office of Legal Counsel. It does not discuss any specific targeted individuals. Furthermore, the document emphasizes that it does not consider the specific thresholds of evidence deemed sufficient for a targeted killing. The white paper contends that killing a U.S. citizen who is a senior operational leader in Al-Qaeda or an associated force is lawful when three conditions apply. 1. An informed high-level official of the U.S. government has determined that the targeted individual poses an imminent threat of violent attack against the United States. 2. Capture is not feasible, but the United States continues to monitor whether capture becomes feasible. And 3. The operation would be conducted in a manner consistent with applicable law of war principles. The paper adopts an elastic definition of imminent threat, saying it is not necessary for a specific attack to be in progress when a target is found if that target is generally engaged in terrorist activities aimed at the United States.
The white paper also asserts that courts should not play a role in reviewing or restraining targeting decisions. The paper states that, quote, judicial enforcement of such orders would require the court to supervise inherently predictive judgments by the president and his national security advisors as to when and how to use force against a member of an enemy force against which Congress has authorized the use of force, unquote. In response to the release of the white paper, the Center for Constitutional Rights, a nonprofit legal and educational organization, made the following statements. quote, "This white paper's claim of executive power is disturbing enough on its own, but it doesn't describe the vast majority of targeted killings being carried out by the U.S. government, which now number in the thousands. One of the most dangerous aspects of the white paper is the claim that there exists no appropriate judicial forum to evaluate these constitutional considerations either before or after a killing." The parallels to the Bush administration torture memos are chilling. Those were unchecked legal justifications drawn up to justify torture. These are unchecked justifications drawn up to justify extrajudicial killing. End quote. Hina Shamsi, director of the American Civil Liberty Union's National Security Project, said, in reference to the white paper, quote, "This is a profoundly disturbing document, and it's hard to believe that it was produced in a democracy built on a system of checks and balances. It summarizes in cold legal terms a stunning overreach of executive authority, the claimed power to declare Americans a threat and kill them far from a recognized battlefield and without any judicial involvement before or after the fact." But this briefing paper is not a substitute for the 50-page legal memo on which it's based. When the executive branch seeks to give itself the unilateral authority to kill its own citizens, a summary of its argument is no substitute for the argument itself. President Obama rightly released the Bush-era OLC torture memos, and he should now hold his own administration to the same standard by releasing its killing memo. End quote. More specifically, Jamil Jaffer, the ACLU's deputy legal director, pointed out that, quote, "The 16-page white paper is said to summarize a 50-odd-page legal memo written in 2010 by the Justice Department's Office of Legal Counsel to justify the addition of U.S. citizen Anwar al-Awlaki to the government's kill lists. That legal memo is one of the documents that ACLU is seeking in an ongoing Freedom of Information Act lawsuit." The paper's basic contention is that the government has the authority to carry out the extrajudicial killing of an American citizen if an informed, high-level official deems him to present a continuing threat to the country. This sweeping authority is said to exist even if the threat presented isn't imminent in any ordinary sense of the word, even if the target has never been charged with a crime or informed of the allegations against him, and even if the target is not located anywhere near an actual battlefield. The white paper purports to recognize some limits on the authority it sets out, but the limits are so vague and elastic that they will be easily manipulated. The paper initially suggests, for example, the government's authority to use lethal force is limited to people who present imminent threats, but it then proceeds to redefine the word imminence in a way that deprives the word of its ordinary meaning. The paper does something similar with the phrase, "capture is infeasible." It initially sounds like a real limitation, but by page 8 it seems to mean only that the government won't use lethal force if capture is more convenient. It's a language of limits, but without any real restrictions. Even more problematic, the paper contends that the limits on the government's claimed authority are not enforceable in any court, stating that there exists no appropriate judicial forum to evaluate these constitutional considerations. According to the white paper, the government has the authority to carry out targeted killings of U.S. citizens without presenting evidence to a judge before the fact or after, and indeed without even acknowledging to the courts or to the public that the authority has been exercised. Without saying so explicitly, the government claims the authority to kill American terrorism suspects in secret. End quote.
David Kay, a clinical professor of law at UC Irvine, who served as a State Department lawyer from 1995 to 2005, introduces some of the international law issues addressed or implicated by the white papers in an insight piece for the American Society of International Law. The following are key excerpts from his analysis. The paper is the first official document publicly released to spell out the Obama administration's legal position regarding the overseas targeted killings of U.S. citizens alleged to be al-Qaeda's leaders. The white paper likely summarizes detailed legal analyses conducted by the Obama administration from 2009 to 2011. It begins with an introduction that limits its scope and highlights the conditions that the Justice Department believes must be met to use force within that scope. Its first sentence indicates that its analysis is limited to, quote, "the circumstances in which the U.S. government could use lethal force in a foreign country outside the area of active hostilities against a U.S. citizen who is a senior operational leader of al-Qaeda or an associated force of al-Qaeda. That is, an al-Qaeda leader actively engaged in planning operations to kill Americans." It concludes that such an operation would be lawful where, 1. An informed high-level official of the U.S. government has determined that the targeted individual poses an imminent threat of violent attack against the United States. 2. Capture is infeasible and the United States continues to monitor whether capture becomes feasible. And 3. The operation would be conducted in a manner consistent with applicable law of war principles. The Department of Justice sets forth its analysis in 4 substantive parts. The first part addresses the authority to use force against Al-Qaeda in a foreign country, under domestic and international law. The second part examines U.S. constitutional issues raised by the targeting of a person, focusing in particular on the 4th and 5th Amendments. The third and fourth parts of the white paper address federal criminal law, in particular whether such a killing would amount to an unlawful killing of an American by an American under Section 1119 of Title 18 of the U.S. Code, or a war crime under the War Crimes Act. Domestic law is more central in the white paper than international law. The citations to international law are limited compared to domestic law. There is no discussion of state practice apart from that of the United States, and the analysis is relatively slight, much of it occurring under the rubric of domestic constitutional analysis. A clear international law defense of U.S. targeted killing policy in general may be found in the 2010 keynote speech of then State Department legal advisor Harold Coe, made at the annual meeting of the American Society of International Law and cited in the white paper. The white paper is mainly concerned with 2 categories of international law questions. First, may the United States lawfully use lethal force against Al-Qaeda outside of Afghanistan, the zone of active hostilities, and if so, under what conditions? And second, what principles govern the targeting of a particular person? These are mainly questions of international humanitarian law and the law governing resort to the use of force. The white paper does not address, for instance, the potential applicability of international human rights law. While the Justice Department limited the paper's scope to the targeted killings of a U.S. citizen alleged to be an operational leader of Al-Qaeda, much of the international law analysis would seem to apply in the case of non-American targets of lethal force as well. Following are a portion of the international law questions raised or implicated by the white paper. Regarding the authority to resort to armed forces against Al-Qaeda. The Justice Department finds the domestic authority to use force against Al-Qaeda and the grant of the military force of September 14, 2001, and the President's constitutional responsibility to protect the nation. Like the authority for the use of military force in the Coe speech, the white paper also asserts the international law right of self-defense arising out of the 9/11 attacks. Although unclear from the published draft, the white paper may also be preserving an independent right of self-defense apart from the 9/11 attacks. Generally speaking, the white paper assumes the lawfulness of using force as a matter of national self-defense and analyzes the specific targeting questions under the law of armed conflict. Article 2.4 of the UN Charter prohibits the threat or use of force against the territorial integrity or political independence of any state. The Charter recognizes 2 exceptions to the prohibition: authorization of force by UN Security Council and exercise of the inherent right of self-defense under Article 51 of the Charter. The White Paper and the Coe speech before it rest on the second exception. Both also acknowledge that the use of force against any particular person would need to account for the sovereignty of the state where force is used. Sovereignty concerns may be avoided if the United States obtains the consent of the host nation's government. Consent is a customary exception to the prohibition on the use of force. In the absence of such consent, the white paper asserts the need, before using force, for a determination that the host nation is unable or unwilling to suppress the threat posed by the individual targeted. In addition, while there is much scholarly debate over the extent to which imminent armed attacks may trigger the right of self-defense under Article 51, the White Paper treats imminence not as a self-defense issue under the international law, but as one of due process under the 5th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution.
As for the existence of an armed conflict with Al-Qaeda, the White Paper suggests in the introduction that the President has authority to respond to the imminent threat posed by Al-Qaeda and its associated forces arising from the existence of an armed conflict with Al-Qaeda under international law. An armed conflict is a state of hostilities, something more than isolated and sporadic acts of violence, existing between two or more parties during which some behavior, otherwise unlawful, is permissible. If the force contemplated by the White Paper involves an armed conflict between the United States and Al-Qaeda, then the rules governing targeting would be drawn from the law of armed conflict, which generally permits the use of lethal force against combatants. For instance, as Harold Coe put in his 2010 speech at the annual meeting of the American Society of International Law, a state that is engaged in an armed conflict or in legitimate self-defense is not required to provide targets with legal process before the state may use lethal force. If, however, the force contemplated in the White Paper does not involve an armed conflict with Al-Qaeda, then the applicable rules may be less clear. The United States may justify force in that context as self-defense under the UN Charter, in which case principles of distinction and proportionality would apply. This is a possible implication of Harold Coe's statement that a state could be engaged in an armed conflict or in legitimate self-defense, and his subsequent reference to principles of distinction and proportionality. It is possible that others would argue that law enforcement norms of necessity, imminence, and proportionality would govern. Outside of armed conflict, a targeted individual may have a stronger claim to protection under international human rights law, which contains strict limits on the authority of a state to take life. Another international law question raised by the White Paper is that of the conflict beyond Afghanistan. The White Paper presents the issue of using force outside Afghanistan as a question of the geographic scope of a non-international armed conflict in which one of the parties is a transnational, non-state actor and where the principal theater of operations is not within the territory of the nation that is party to the conflict. It acknowledges the argument that force may be used in a location outside Afghanistan only where hostilities become sufficiently intense and protracted in the new location. It asserts, however, that there is little judicial or other authoritative precedent that speaks directly to the question of the geographic scope of a non-international armed conflict. Adopting a standard not found in international law, but drawing on some of its principles by analogy, the Justice Department takes the view that a lethal operation would be part of the non-international armed conflict with Al-Qaeda if the terrorist group has a significant and organized presence in a country from which its leaders plan attacks against the U.S. persons and interests. Regarding the authority to use force against the operational leaders of Al-Qaeda, the White Paper takes the position that the United States is in a non-international armed conflict with Al-Qaeda, in which Common Article 3 of the Geneva Conventions applies. Under Common Article 3, basic humanitarian rules, including the prohibition of violence to life and person, protect persons taking no active part in the hostilities. However, a person who takes an active or direct part in the hostilities would be subject to attack. Relying in part on a major 2009 study by the International Committee of the Red Cross, the White Paper takes the position that an operational commander of Al-Qaeda would be subject to attack as a person taking an active part in hostilities. As for the principles of the law of armed conflict, in the Fifth Amendment due process discussion, the White Paper notes as a premise that four different law of war principles apply in the circumstances: necessity, distinction, proportionality, and humanity, or the avoidance of unnecessary suffering. The paper does not explain the first two principles, but emphasizes proportionality. Drawing from the standard of the basic law of armed conflict, it notes that casualties should not be excessive in relation to the anticipated military advantage. It also notes that the law of armed conflict would require the United States to accept a surrender if it were feasible to do so. In this context, the White Paper also asserts the generally accepted principle that the law of war does not prohibit, but rather regulates, the use of technologically advanced weapon systems, such as drones or smart bombs. In what appears to be a nod to the use of such weapons, the White Paper states that stealth or surprise in an attack would be lawful. Because the White Paper left open many issues, for instance, the position of the high-level official who makes such determinations, the steps that should be taken to demonstrate infeasibility of capture, and the process for holding officials accountable for violations of the conditions set forth, public observers are left to wonder how, if at all, such issues are treated in the actual conduct of the U.S. counterterrorism program. The White Paper fails to adequately address the international legal rules or to provide for mechanisms of accountability regarding targeted killings.
Marjorie Cohn, professor of human rights at the Thomas Jefferson School and former president of the National Lawyers Guild, has also commented on the White Paper on targeted killings in an interview with Dennis Bernstein. Cohn affirms that the very nebulous test that the white paper lays out even allows the targeted killing of somebody who is considered to be a continuing threat. Quote, "So we have a global battlefield where if there is someone, anywhere, who might be associated with Al-Qaeda, according to a high government official, then Obama can authorize. It's not even clear Obama himself has to authorize these targeted killings, these drone attacks, on Terror Tuesday, who he is going to kill after consulting with John Brennan. One of the most disturbing things here is the amassing of executive power with no review by the courts, no checks and balances. So the courts will have no opportunity to interpret what imminence means or what continuing threat means. The white paper cites John Yoo, who claims that courts have no role to play in what the president does in this so-called war on terror, where the whole world is a battlefield. I say so-called war on terror because terrorism is a tactic. It's not an enemy. You don't declare war on a tactic. And the white paper refers Yoo's statements that judicial review constitutes judicial encroachment on the judgments by the president and his national security advisors as to when and how to use force. The white paper cites Hamdi v. Rumsfeld, which says the president has the authority to hold U.S. citizens caught on the battlefield in Afghanistan as enemy combatants. But in Hamdi, the Supreme Court stated that a U.S. citizen who was being detained as an enemy combatant is entitled to due process. Due process means an arrest and a fair trial. It doesn't mean just taking him out with a drone." End quote. Asked about the Geneva Conventions, she says that they define willful killings as a grave breach. Quote, "And grave breaches are punishable as war crimes. So the white paper also violates the Geneva Conventions. Although the white paper says that they are going to follow the well-established principle of proportionality, proportionality means that an attack cannot be excessive in relation to the anticipated military advantage. I don't see how they can actually put that into practice because the force is going to be excessive. When you see how they are using drones, they are taking out convoys and they are killing civilians, large numbers of civilians. There's another principle of international law called distinction, which requires that the attack be directed only at legitimate military targets. We know from the New York Times expose that the kill list that Brennan brings to Obama to decide who he is going to take out without a trial, basically execute, can be used even if they don't have a name, or if they are present in an area where there are suspicious patterns of behavior. These are known as signature strikes. That means that bombs are dropped on unidentified people who are in an area where suspicious activity is taking place. That goes even beyond targeted killings. Targeted killings are considered to be illegal. The UN Special Rapporteur on Extrajudicial Summary for Arbitrary Executions, Christoph Heinz, expressed grave concerns about these targeted killings, seeing that they may constitute war crimes. He called on the Obama administration to explain how its drone strikes comport with international law and to specify the basis for the decision to kill rather than capture particular individuals. End quote. Marjorie Cohn also points out that, quote, "The white paper says that one of the requirements before they can take someone out is that capture is infeasible." As you go on and read this memo, infeasible begins to look like inconvenient. We have these very mushy terms with no clear standards that comply with international law. Yet there is no oversight by any court, and Congress has no role either. So we don't have any checks and balances. End quote.
For further information on the state of exception and human rights, you may visit Equipo NISCORS and Radio NISCORS related webpages. This program has been prepared with information provided by the Federation of American Scientists, Truthout, the Center for Constitutional Rights, the American Civil Liberties Union, the American Society of International Law, Marjorie Cohn's website, NBC News, The New York Times, The Washington Post, and the Office of the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights. It has been produced by Radio NISCOR with the collaboration of the International Human Rights Law Clinic at the American University Washington College of Law and edited and post-produced at our studios in Belgium in April 2013.